Okay, good morning, everyone. I want to call the meeting of the Workforce Committee to order. And with that, Winter, could you please take roll call?
Chair Del Carlo.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carter.
Present.
Regent Brooks.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran. Regent Perkins. You have a quorum.
Here.
Oh, thank you.
Here.
Thank you. You have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. And was that Regent Tarkanian that's here? I heard somebody say something.
No, that's Regent Moran. Good morning, Regent Del Carlo.
Oh, that's Regent Moran. Thank you. Okay. Okay, with that, we'll go to item number one, which is public comment. Do we have any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment.
Thank you, Elko. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
There is none.
Thank you. Is there any public comment here in Reno? Oh, I see none. With that, we'll go on to item number two, approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Okay, thank you, Regent McMichael. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. And does anybody have any discussion or any corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of the approval of the minutes as written, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes. We'll go to item number three, which is the chair's report. And today is the first day of the meeting, really, of our new workforce committee. It was previously called the Community College Committee. I know people used to think, why do you have a community college committee and you don't have a university committee? So kind of made sense, and workforce is all-encompassing. It's not just the community college, although the community college is a prime driver. We think of it in a different term for the type of jobs that the community colleges put out. But so that community college committee, we had our last meeting in December of 2021, and we changed the name to align with the current needs of the state. And this committee will continue to highlight and support the community colleges, specifically in the colleges focus on workforce development and training efforts in such areas as hospitality, tourism, culinary arts, healthcare information technology, coding, and applied technology. From time to time, our committee may hear from the four-year institutions, because absolutely, when you get a four-year degree, a master's degree, PhD, of course you're entering the workforce. And currently in Nevada, we have a heightened sense of awareness around the state workforce needs, and our governor did bring that. Certainly his focus when he became governor was workforce. It was in his first state of the state. And in addition to this new committee with the name change, we had the AB 450 committee that came out of the 2021 legislature. That was the name of that committee. AB 450 is the bill, but it's called the Community College Workforce Training and Program Committee. It wrapped up this week, had its final meeting with a work session, and we're going to hear about one of the things that came out of that work session. That's part of our agenda today, and that's the it's new. It's the workforce incentive grant. We have a nice acronym so you can remember it. It's called WIG. I like it when we have something we can remember. So it's going to be a pilot program. We're going to have a discussion on that today. And with that, that's the end of my chair's report. So with that, we'll go to the community college. Item number four, critical issues on workforce development. And I think that's Dr. Karen Hilgerson. You have the floor.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Karen Hilgerson, president of TMCC, for the record. As you are aware, this workforce committee began as a community college committee, and clearly the scope has been both narrowed and expanded at the same time, which I think is good for the state of Nevada. Today, I will present a very brief overview on behalf of the four predominantly two-year colleges in the NSHE system. I do ask in advance that questions on behalf of institutions other than TMCC be directed toward the appropriate president here with us today. Moreover, we hope that at future meetings, you as regents will direct our presentations on topics that you are most interested in or concerned about. Workforce education and training can be complex programs that entail industry connection and support, as well as support from the Department of Labor, local trade unions, and targeted scholarship funding. Some of our programs are designed to begin with a certificate and stack all the way to a four-year applied bachelor's degree. Other programs are non-credit, very flexible and customized to meet industry needs. Within ENSHE, I've observed that our internal definition of workforce education has been broadened quite a lot in the last couple of years. We now include pretty much everything that contributes to a job as workforce, whether it is an engineer or an entry-level certified nurse's aide. To lend clarity for today's purposes, I am focusing on the work that predominantly two-year colleges tend to do, and it's also work that tends not to transfer to the two universities. Note the words, tend not to transfer. There may be exceptions, but for the most part, applied associate degrees or AAS degrees do not transfer. There may be elements of these hands-on programs that universities will accept. For example, the automotive credits that count toward a TMCC degree, an automotive certified technician, a program we have at TMCC, are credits that most universities will reject. But to further clarify, and this is a really important point, this does not mean that lack of transfer is a problem. It's not a problem. It's appropriate. Although sometimes communicating this to students and parents is a challenge. Frankly, students who graduate with such degrees oftentimes have a good job lined up prior to graduation. Transfer is not needed for some fields and for some certificates, and that's fine. That's a good thing. So I'm not implying that transfer is broken in Nevada. Quite the contrary. I've worked in three other states. This is the best transfer, seamless transfer system I've ever worked in. And Nevada should be very, very proud of that. Transfer is seamless and effective in the appropriate university programs. I know that our particular staff groups in student services and with some faculty support, they've worked hard to make this happen, particularly in the last few years and with the leadership of Vice Chancellor Crystal Abba and Renee Davis, too. But for definitional purposes, it's important to understand that when we hear industry reps say workforce development, in their minds, they're often referring to non-transfer professional technical programs. There are other phases used to help us differentiate workforce programs that exist only at predominantly two-year colleges. Phrases such as upskilling, middle-skilled talent, workforce training, with emphasis on the word training, or professional technical, or career technical, CT education, and finally, incumbent worker training. These phrases help clarify the difference between preparing a TMCC student to transfer to UNR's engineering program, which is becoming more popular, versus a terminal degree that typically will not transfer to universities, and again, that's okay. TMCC prepares both types of students for a workforce. However, the challenges related to funding, student recruitment, and industry need are very different. As a board, you may want to dig deeper into these differences and distinctions in the upcoming year. Second slide. The linkages between such programs and local economies is a vital one. We have enjoyed an expansion of work-based learning programs in Nevada thanks in large part to the Department of Labor funding and good relationships with union apprenticeship programs. The numbers of students who are able to learn and earn statewide varies from year to year, but currently we have hundreds statewide. We have 663 apprentices at TMCC served alone this year. Apprentices take many forms across our, Dieter is an extremely important partner in all of this. Apprenticeship takes many forms across our state and in northern Nevada. They include manufacturing, health careers, electrical, and other union-sponsored trades. Of course, clinical and field work are also key success of many programs, particularly in the health careers. And at TMCC, we are seeing an expansion of employers who seek TMCC interns and apprentices. Again, much of this work requires additional subsidy, and WIN, GOED, DOL, and DOE have all been supportive through competitive grant processes and effective coordination. As a state, we should be very proud of Nevada's efforts and collaboration. From my perspective, and because I have worked in several states during my career, Nevada is really great in this regard. But the pandemic has hurt these efforts, there's no question. And I look forward to getting back on track and focus through committees such as this. Finally, I would be remiss if I did not mention the various pipelines to workforce training programs. These include adult basic education, high school equivalency, English as a second language. These are programs unique to predominantly two-year colleges. These programs are funded through state and federal grants. These are programs that serve people. People who need skill building prior to entering college level or workforce transfer programs. This group of learners are incredibly diverse in age and experience. I visited several ESL classes recently, English as second language, and one class included several refugees. They happened to be from Haiti that day. A trained dentist, I forget what country she was from, but none of her dental training credits counted, and so she's basically starting over, and students from South America and Mexico. Our high school equivalency programs also meet a very special need. These are students that for so many unique reasons never completed high school. We get many of them across that finish line, and many enroll because we incentivize immediate enrollment in a college-level workforce or transfer course. Because these students tend to be in their mid-20s or older, they are seeking a better job, and this translates into an applied workforce program. Now let's turn to the critical issues, and boy, we have a bunch of those. So what are the critical issues facing the continued delivery of these programs? Perhaps the most immediate critical issue for ENCHI is the end of the capacity enhancement funding. This is a fund to buoy workforce students through instruction and student support services and represents approximately $9 million annually to ENCHI institutions. We know this fund will sunset in the 23 year. The legislators have been very clear about that. And that is why ENCHI is seeking a new fund that we are calling the Workforce Development and Investment Fund. This would be a non-formula fund that would help offset the loss of capacity funding and ideally maintain and start up new training programs as they are needed by industry. And each regional Nevada economy is a little bit different. So though having those funds to start up programs unique to each campus is important. Probably the most difficult work that two-year colleges must do well is figuring out how to fund programs that are applied. They are equipment intensive, faculty intensive, or both. When you think about it, we have some health career accreditation standards where the faculty-student ratio is 6-1. 6-1. And in some of those programs, the weighted student factor is 1. This is not sustainable, and particularly since we've all not been made whole from the pandemic loss of funding. Furthermore, the second challenge is how to market high-need programs to potential students. For example, we know we need many more HVAC technicians in Nevada to assist with the construction of massive data centers and later on to maintain the HVAC equipment at those centers that keeps the servers cool. And in the South, I can imagine that you need some pretty good HVAC to keep those servers cool in the summertime. Sadly, this program is a hard sell for young people for whatever reason. Other programs have different student recruiting challenges, such as teaching, IT networking, cybersecurity, and commercial driver's license or professional truck driving. We also have the opposite problem. We have great student interest that aligns with industry need, but in programs that are so expensive, the cost is not even close to being covered by tuition in the state, and nursing is the best example of that. Again, as presidents, we continue to seek solutions, including through state funding and industry sponsorship. But we cannot do this alone. We need your support, your advocacy, your clear thinking, and your clear understanding of the issues. To summarize the critical issues, there are funding issues, marketing and recruiting student issues, issues related to appropriately meeting industry needs. The good news is that each institution has demonstrated a willingness to step it up. We have faculty and staff who are designing relevant programs to meet industry needs. CSN's Advanced Manufacturing Center of Excellence in partnership with Haas and the City of Henderson. GBC's proposed Mining Center of Excellence efforts. WNC's work on CDL training. And TMCC's expansion of emergency medical and firefighting, to name just a few examples. Speaking on behalf of the predominantly two-year colleges, we look forward to digging into this through the Workforce Committee in the near future. Rest assured that our institutional advisory councils are also ready to assist and engage with this important work. I know mine is, and they're amazing, amazing industry representatives and advocates for TMCC. In closing, Nevada's prosperity can be sustained assuming Nevada's policymakers and leaders continue to emphasize a technically trained, highly skilled workforce, particularly a workforce that aligns with the growing number of companies moving here. For example, companies that are manufacturing products or monetizing web-based applications in a variety of economic sectors. Let's build our understanding of what this new Nevada workforce needs and go from there. Thank you. And are there any questions for me or any of the presidents here today?
Thank you for that great presentation. We have a question from Regent Carvalho.
Thank you. You mentioned DEETER is a very important part of this. I would like to know how DEETER is involved in this.
Well, and I'll give you a TMCC example, and I know others could probably pitch in as well. But during the pandemic, we coordinated, meaning my team and I, a meeting with DEETER and Nevada Works. And the new DEETER director, Elise Cafferata, is incredible. And the three of us got together and first of all, shared numbers, identified that in northern Nevada, there were about 6,500 workers that we sort of lost track of. Nobody knew where they were. But it was highly likely they were unemployed or underemployed. Right? And so we stood up a couple of programs and did targeted marketing. And at that point, DEETER agreed to let any unemployed person count researching TMCC programs toward one job application. That's just a little example of a kind of low-hanging fruit. Here's what we could do easily to get the word out to possible displaced workers because of the pandemic about where they can get upskilled really quickly and get back on the job. And I think Dr. Zaragoza may have something to add, too, if that's all right with Chair Del Carlo.
Federico Zaragoza, for the record, College of Southern Nevada. I concur with Karen's observations. DEETER is part of the ecosystem, and they play very many different roles, especially in Southern Nevada. One of the areas that they're very helpful in is in really the policy and also the data side of the house to help us identify kind of these emerging pockets, emerging jobs. Also, they work with the ecosystem, so they could connect the work of the LVGA with kind of the work of the local workforce boards and the local community college. So, and a lot of times, they're conveners and helping local communities stay very responsive and productive. And then, of course, they're very influential, I think, in aligning resources, as Karen just indicated, that are project-specific. But I can tell you that they're very much at the core of the workforce ecosystems.
Thank you. I think it's very important to have that strong partnership with DEETER. And I think it would be interesting at some point to have a presentation, maybe a joint presentation with them. Thank you.
That's a great idea.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. That is a good idea. And we have Regent Brooks next and Regent Perkins in the queue.
Thank you, Regent Brooks, for the record. Thank you very much for the presentation. You know, having had some conversation with you and some of the other presidents, what's very apparent for me is that there are some things that that the board has requested to support in efforts to help the institution or students. And I think it would be great if there were more conversations that took place just like that. And whether it's something that we as a board can facilitate to support the institution or our presidents from an administrative end, specifically to help with relief, then we would want to have those types of conversations. Particularly if there is something that is in our policy or our handbooks that have to be updated to ensure that we're presenting, right, the best possible scenarios in terms of those administrative parts that might hinder you. And we want to be able to alleviate that. So if there's something that comes up that you recognize that, hey, if this policy was just a little bit different, we'd be able to move more effectively. So I just want to let you know that we're open to that, and we'd like to have those conversations. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And one quick response. Lately, we've had a lot of difficulty, and my Vice President Jeff Alexander can attest to this, hiring faculty representing industry with our current salary schedules. And we've had to just try to figure it out, but it's really becoming a problem as an example. And part of that is related to salary placement and code. And so, yeah, great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. Regent Perkins, are you on the phone?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
You mentioned earlier about the apprenticeship program. Is that an increase? And with the other institutions, how many apprenticeship programs do they have in comparison to like before this committee started?
So I will speak to TMCC, Karin Hilgerson for the record, and then perhaps the other presidents can chime in. Pre-pandemic, we were serving almost 900 apprentices. Then we took a big dip, and now we're trending up again very quickly, and we're really happy about that. So in the last academic year, it was, like I said, 663, but I'd like to see us with 1,500 apprentices, because the neat thing about that is students get paid. And we have a CNA program. They not only get paid to work, they get paid to go to class because of a Department of Labor grant that we are a subcontract awardee on, and that's in partnership with Renown. This is amazing when you're, you know, when you're a single parent with two kids and you know you need a better job, but you really don't have a lot of skills, but you're smart. You can do this, right? So to start getting paid while you're training is just incredible. Anyway, but do any of the other presidents want to provide an update on your particular apprenticeships programs?
Madam Chair, Federico Zaragoza for the record, College of Southern Nevada. Apprenticeship programs actually in Southern Nevada and at CSN grew during the pandemic. We went from 1,300 to 1,600 individuals. We grew by 300. And we're also kind of beginning to develop more robust pipelines that are pre-apprenticeship kind of programs. So that's a major part of what we do, primarily in the construction trades area. One of the opportunities here, though, and I know that Karin does a lot of great work, recognized nationally, is that now apprenticeships are moving into other sectors, and I think that that's where the opportunity is for us to continue to partner amongst entry institutions, and then also to diversify within our own communities how we're addressing workforce needs.
President Dalpy, did you want to say anything on that?
Yeah, so and I'll echo Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College. We have about 300 to 350 apprentices, primarily in the building trade sector. And so part of that idea of diversification that President Zaragoza mentioned was spot on, and we'll look at doing that as we go forward.
Thank you, and not to be left out, President Hellens.
Good morning. Joyce Hellens, President, Great Basin College. As the board's aware, of course, it's a little bit different in rural Nevada. And for the last 20 years, we've had the mining and maintenance training cooperative. And this is where the mining industry gets together. And they award not only full scholarships to our CTE programs, but paid apprenticeships. And this actually benefits the mining industry because then they hire who they want, and they're able to train and pay for it, and of course it's excellent for students. But we're also seeing that now in rural Nevada for nursing, where during the pandemic the hospitals wanted to have some kind of a paid internship for nurses actually in training, and then they were able to hire and place them there. So it's a little bit different in the rural area in terms of numbers, because we're talking not thousands, but rather hundreds. But it's been something we've been doing successfully for 20 years, collaborating with industry.
Thank you. Thank you. That's real important for our state to be able to train people to stay in our state to fill those needs. So thank you, all the colleges.
Okay, we go to Regent Moran.
Well, hi there. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, you know, obviously I wanted to commend our leadership at the institutions, our community colleges, and of course our state colleges. I've spent an unusual amount of time gearing up for legislative 2023, and having talked to our majority leaders and minority leaders and all leadership over at within the legislature, I'm just hearing some great things in terms of the coordination of our community colleges and state colleges with the legislative efforts that are being put in place, and considering, you know, what has happened with COVID and how things have slowed down, and being able to fill the educational and workforce gap. But one item in particular that was brought to my attention, again, all of our institutional leaders, I think, are doing God's work and great work, and I appreciate that, and I'm very happy about that. I commend that. But, you know, just Dr. Helgerson, just to note, in some of my conversations, you know, the collaboration by you with the legislature to better align our educational programs or curriculum with the workforce needs in a particular locale or area has just been significant. And in looking at some of the stuff that you're doing at TNCC in particular, it's really great to look at that, because, you know, all of us as Nevadans, you know, we all want to be able to earn a good quality of life and have a nice livelihood. And I think that this is really an area that really provides some significant gains in that area. And that workforce training really, really gives back to the folks that really want to roll up their sleeves and get to work and throw more tools in their toolbox and advance forward. So again, my hat's off not only to all of our institutional leaders. I think we've got some really terrific presidents at this level and in this particular ecosystem. But Dr. Helgerson, I want to commend that effort, because your name keeps coming up. Legislative leaders keep bringing up your name and your continued, you know, work, hard work towards trying to collaborate and create new ideas and whatnot to fill that board. So again, I appreciate that. Appreciate everything you all are doing. And thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me additional time to talk about this.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Regent Moran. And we almost don't recognize you. A new look. And with that, we'll go to our President Dalpy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle Dalpy, WNC, for the record. I want to thank President Helgerson for leading this item and putting together this presentation that we are all able to chime in on. I have a couple comments back to two slides. One is on funding, just to make the committee members, I think you're aware, but just to reinforce that when we stand up new programs in a given semester, there's a cost to stand them up, and we get registration fees for that, but the weighted student credit hour state appropriation doesn't come for 2 years later. That's kind of the reason we're always scrambling for some kind of startup funds for programs so that we can get them going, and then they will eventually, throughout the two-year funding cycle, keep themselves going with the weighted student credit hour appropriation. So that's one of the reasons you see a lot of grants, outside support, state support, and that and such. On the startup of programs, so the investment funding is key. The second piece that was mentioned, I think, in slide two or three, was the marketing piece, getting young people interested in careers. We can all talk about what we do for car maintenance because we own cars, but if we try to tell somebody what they're going to do with robotics in a Tesla plant or any other industry, they have really don't have an idea, and sometimes counselors and parents struggle with that too. What does a machine tool tech person do? It's really hard to sell, so the marketing piece is key. Again, we can all talk about kicking tires, and that's the auto industry because we're familiar with it, but the other sectors are so rapidly changing, often we can't keep ahead of it with the marketing, and so two pieces of investment there to get the word out and get people in the pipeline to new and existing programs. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, President Dalpy, and with that, I just want to say thank you to you,
President Hilgerson for representing your colleagues. It was an excellent presentation. And I do appreciate the shout out you did on how good Nevada's transfer rate is. Yeah. I hear that at national conventions also. Mm-hmm. I remember when OIC ABBA gave us a presentation, because that's been one of our board's goals, is to have a better mm-hmm. transfer rate. And if I remember the figure, it was 95.6%. And that is really the envy in the nation, because mm-hmm. I hear that all the time at community college meetings, how it's such a struggle in other states. So I really applaud this board, and I've always said, let's get to 100. We're at 95.6. Let's just keep improving. So if there's no more questions, we'll go on to item number. Thank you.
I think Dr. Helens has her
answer. Dr. Helens.
I will sit down. Thank you.
I'm sorry, President Helens. We'll go to President Helens.
Thank you, Chair Del Carlo. I just didn't want to leave this without making one other comment, and President Hilgerson touched on it, that it's not just an end-all, and what we're talking about is not something that we want to put a fence around and not let anybody else in. And let me just mention a couple things. You've heard me say well-lighted pathway. And I think what we owe all of our students in the state of Nevada, all of our students with whom we work, is a well-lighted pathway. And so it's just a hot point of mine when I hear you hear it nationally about, well, you can get a good job with the certificate, as though that should be a terminal job, which it should not. Or not everyone needs a degree, and I always say, why not? So I think in higher education, historically, sometimes it's like a high-rise building with no elevator and maybe one staircase. In the past, it's been lots of staircases. You just could wander around, take lots of credits, and wouldn't mean anything. So I think what's really important to serve Nevada is that we have guided pathways. And it's our own fault that we have applied degrees that don't transfer, because I do think we should never close the door, because we don't stay in the same jobs. We want other things. When people realize that they are worthy and they could progress and they're smart, they might say, I want to own the company. And we should always leave a door open where they can come back into our high rise and go where they want to. So we're a start in many instances, but we should never close the door to that. Thank you.
Thank you. That's an excellent point. Okay, with that, we'll go to item number 5, University and State College Workforce Development Initiatives, and we'll turn the floor over to UNLV Executive Vice President and Provost, Chris Heavey.
Thank you very much, Chair Del Carlo and Vice Chair Carter, for giving us the opportunity to talk about workforce developments at the University and State College. As you said in your opening remarks, Del Carlo, that workforce development is certainly a critical part of all of our missions. I'm Chris Heavey, Executive Vice President and Provost of UNLV. And our vision at UNLV, which you approved recently, and we thank you for that, is improving the lives of our diverse students and transforming our communities through education and engagement. And what we understand is that the students come to us because they believe that the time that they spend at the university will help them transform their lives. And the number one thing they're looking for is to have opportunities that they would not have otherwise had in the workforce. So that's the main reason that students come to us, and we recognize that. And in recognition of that, we have developed our workforce strategic plan in alignment with the system's priorities. And our strategic plan has three key pillars, which is to first offer high-demand degrees and certificate programs that fit the 21st century economy, that are valuable to the students who come to us. Second is to integrate workforce readiness into all academic programs, so make sure that students, no matter what they're studying, are building their workforce skills. And third, and very importantly, is to promote active student participation in career planning through a life cycle approach. Students come to us from high schools, and often they don't understand that they have to take an active role in building their workforce readiness skills. And so this is a list, and I won't go through it, but I think if you look at this list, you'll see that everything on the list is a high demand, key type of set of skills that students would need for different careers in the 21st century. And we offer all of these degrees and, of course, many more at UNLV. And we also have the notion that every degree counts, because we know that students are coming to us to help improve their workforce outcomes. And so this is a word cloud that shows the number of degrees over the last 5 years awarded in these various areas. And you'll see that hospitality, which is key to our state workforce is the largest word there, representing that that's the number one degree that we've offered. And I'll also comment that psychology, my own home field, and it represents, is a very large degree. It represents bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, and doctoral degrees. And we now have a doctoral program in clinical psychology that I helped start 20 years ago. And we have people all over the state in key leadership roles in providing mental health care from that doctoral program. And I'll also notice, if you look at the small things, there's a dental surgery on there. And if you need a dental surgeon, you need a dental surgeon. And so those are the kind of critical degrees that the universities are able to provide. We also want to make sure that we integrate workforce readiness into every program. And so we've adopted a set of workforce readiness learning outcomes. It's the language we talk. And we try to teach the faculty members how to integrate these things into their courses, no matter what the content is that they're teaching. We're also working on high-demand micro-credentials, because we know that that's going to be a big part of the future, is these micro-credentials that allow people to pursue very targeted careers with those skills. And the other thing we're working on, and we've developed a module to help faculty learn how to integrate workforce readiness into their programs, because faculty come as content experts, but they don't necessarily know how to teach workforce readiness to their students. And so we have to support our faculty in building those skills so that they can transfer those skills onto their faculty. And so we've built an online module that faculty can use to understand how they can teach students how to be workforce readiness. We're also moving career services into academic affairs to make sure that we have good alignment. And then we have a life cycle approach. So we start with first year seminars, talking to students right when they come into the door that they need to start building their set of experiences so that when they leave, they'll be able to present to faculty, to their potential employers, what it is that they learn that makes them a valuable employee. And so it's not just going through the classes, it's more than that. And this is a list of the different kinds of things that we're doing to try to help students develop that sense of agency so that they become the masters of their own fate as workforce developers. And these are just a few examples of applied experiences. I know that some of the regents were there when we had our recent senior design competition for engineering. And if you were in that room, it's an amazing event where you see graduating seniors in engineering present their projects that they've developed to help solve real-world problems. And those are the kinds of things that build the skills that students need to really go out into the workforce. We also had the President's Innovation Challenge, which President Whitfield pioneered, which was a really also an incredible event that I think a few of the regents were able to attend. We are proud to have graduated more than 150,000 students, most of whom remain in Nevada, and the vast majority of whom say that what they learned in their university experience is relevant to their career that they go on to fulfill. And we're also very proud of our social mobility ranking. One of the things I often say is that at universities like ours, because of our Access mission, we transform more lives than universities like Stanford and Harvard. Those students are typically set before they go to those universities, and those universities take in far fewer students than we do in the NC system and at UNLV. We take in students who are often first generation and might not have gone to college had they not come to us, and we transform their lives by giving them high-value 21st century skills. So thank you very much for your support, and we're delighted to be a part of this committee, and I will hand it over to my fellow provost, Provost Thompson.
So first, thank you, Chair Del Carlo, for giving us an opportunity to present at the committee and all the members of the Board of Regents for the opportunity to talk about workforce development and workforce development initiatives at UNR. Change the slides. And part of this is a preview to our strategic plan, which President Sandoval will be presenting to the board today. So for 150 years, almost 150 years, UNR has been providing education for Nevadans, creating an innovative entrepreneurial workforce that enhances and diversifies Nevada's economy. So we are a comprehensive university with strong academic programs in the arts, humanities, social sciences, business, engineering, education, public health, medicine, journalism, social work, nursing, and science. And in our educational pathways, we emphasize experiential learning in our communities and laboratories, and internships in local businesses, government, and nonprofits, which leads to an innovative and entrepreneurial graduates. UNR has 129 undergraduate programs and 137 graduate programs, where students are prepared to contribute and lead in their discipline and apply their knowledge to current issues and problems. They also learn to create and innovate so they can be the drivers for change in society, business, and government. And in the next several slides, I will present some employment sectors where UNR graduates are contributing to strengthening our communities and diversifying our economy. And the first is, and they're busy slides, they all look like this. First is, you know, something that's overused quite a bit, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics were one of the many places where we have strengths on our campus. And in each of the slides, we ask local business leaders for quotes as how they see UNR contributing to their business and the future of their business. And in this case, I won't read them all. We have one from Tim Crowley from Lithium Nevada and Patrick Lowry from Hariba. And we also have listed companies and organizations where we place graduates or where our graduates have created these companies. And everything on this slide for DSSP, which is a small propulsion company, and ABT, which is a startup on our campus, to large companies like Tesla and Hariba. And I want to point out in this case the company Dragonfly, which was actually started in a garage in Reno by two of our graduates, where they produce lithium storage devices, and last year they did $100 million in sales. And many of these companies did not exist or were not located in Nevada 15 years ago. We're also working to develop new economies, and then you look at this slide and I tie them all together, but there's something that's called the lithium circular economy, which is everything from lithium extraction, which is Lithium Nevada, to energy storage, Tesla and Dragonfly, to new companies that are doing recycling of batteries, Redwood Materials and American Battery Technologies. They're all located in Northern Nevada, and we and our graduates are a big part of developing these companies and creating these companies. There's also been a very interesting nexus of biotechnology companies that's started in Northern Nevada. And again, large companies have moved to the area, Charles River, Hamilton, and Merck, and small startups like Pacific Pharmaceuticals, and even UNR spinoffs from our faculty like DX Discovery. On this one, I have a quote from Rob Stakowitz, who is the corporate vice president for Charles River. But one of their development strategies in Reno was to go from 400 employees to 1,200 employees. And we have been a big part of that strategy. By having students trained and understand their business so they can move right into their business. And I'm very fortunate to, as a proud father, to have an employee at Charles River for my son graduating from UNR. And then education and health. We contribute to the education and health of Nevada, all of Nevada. Education graduates contribute across our state. From all school districts to nonprofits and support organizations, and then in health from hospitals and health systems to, again, nonprofits supporting our future. And again, quotes from Washoe County School District and from the renowned leadership team. And then in business and journalism, also longtime strengths for our university. Gaming, logistics, defense, healthcare, communications, and certainly new ways of communicating. And again, a lot of these companies have moved into our neighborhood in the last few years. We have worked very closely with them to help develop a workforce so they can thrive. So a little bit about workforce outcomes for us the last academic year. We had a little over 3,700 undergraduate degrees conferred for students who are joining the workforce. Almost 1,100 graduate degrees conferred to students who are enhancing our workforce. 90% of our graduates are employed in the military or grad school within a year after graduating. And we have a very high approval rating for the education students have and how it prepares them for the workforce. And very importantly, 72% of graduates joined the Nevada workforce. So most of our students stay in Nevada. And with that, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to present to you. And I will turn it over to my colleague, Vicki Hill.
Thank you, Provost Johnson.
Good morning, Chair Del Carlo and Regents and President. My name is Vicki Shields. I'm the Provost and Executive Vice President at Nevada State, proudly. Like my colleagues, it is our position that all four-year and graduate degrees support the workforce by providing educated citizens and employees. Nevada State Workforce Development aligns with our mission to open doors to career success and enhance quality of life for a diverse population of students and produce graduates who contribute to a better future for all of Nevada. We recognize that for different students and different career interests, there should be multiple paths to success, and therefore our workforce development efforts extend across our full range of program offerings, from the four-year degrees with which we were founded to our recently launched master's level programming to the credentials and certificates that are currently under development. To ensure that our students will be successful and that workforce needs are being addressed, we rely heavily on employer engagement and industry data to choose which programs to develop and shape the learning outcomes they will deliver. Since becoming provost in 2017, I've made it clear that no new programs will be built that do not address an obvious workforce need in the region. Nevada State was founded on the promise of meeting workforce needs. And very much like, unlike liberal arts colleges, for example, and from day one has been built on the cornerstone of nursing and education. We have grown very much since this original mission. As seen in this table, the college contributes a significant percentage of the total nursing graduates within NCHI, and the number has continued to grow in recent years. To further enhance our commitment to developing BSN-prepared nurses, in 2017, we launched our online RN to BSN program, which is specifically designed to improve access for working professionals. Likewise, the following year, we launched the Teacher Academy program, which begins preparing future teachers at the high school level in the hope of significantly ameliorating the teacher shortage in Nevada. This is part of our dual credit program. Though the total number of students who have enrolled is relatively modest at 37 students in fall 2021, we are most encouraged by the growth trajectory. Not only are we admitting students who may not otherwise have pursued a teaching degree before the teaching academies were founded, but the number of students has grown steadily since the academies were launched, which bodes well for future growth. And dual credit overall, we have 2,700 students in dual credit. Some recent developments. In the realm of four-year degrees, our newest program offering of data science was strongly influenced by employer feedback and market trends, suggesting that Nevada had a significant need for more people with this skill set. And the curriculum we created was carefully tailored to fulfill this need. Workforce development also was the principal driver behind the development of our inaugural master's program, Speech-Language Pathology, which emerged to meet the substantive demand for speech-language pathologist professionals in Southern Nevada. And it was inspired, and it has inspired the pursuit of the next graduate program in school psychology. Moreover, this strategy also encompasses major efforts to improve our programs, such as recent overhaul of our business degree, one of our largest majors, that introduced 5 new concentrations in areas that will resonate with employer needs as well as student interests, such as sports management, marketing, finance. Looking ahead, finally, our latest workforce development effort is the creation of a new division of workforce development. It recognizes that the needs of many individuals and industries warrant a different path to career preparation, one that is faster and more agile. Our ongoing development of certificate programs and credentials in this division is designed to complement the work of our peer institutions and pave new paths to success for our students. The programs under development reflect our institutional mission and are designed to meet the needs of both students and employers. Our plan is to deliver in-demand knowledge and skills in flexible, short-form, and accelerated formats that lead to a meaningful credential of achievement, and that often can be stacked towards our 4-year degrees. As with Nevada State as a whole, the Workforce Development Division is grounded in principles of access, equity, and inclusion, and strives to ensure that all Nevadans benefit from opportunities for career success. Our flexible learning modalities allow students to quickly and effectively advance in their current occupations or transition to an entirely new career opportunity. Our initial program will be a leadership academy that helps businesses and organizations transition to success in a post-pandemic work environment and positions individuals to thrive at different levels of leadership. The Leadership Academy will be comprised of 2 separate tracks. The first one is Leadership Boot Camp, a 3-month program that emphasizes fundamental leadership skills across a variety of career paths. The second is Executive Leadership, an advanced 3-month program for more experienced leaders that helps individuals function at a high level in a post-pandemic environment, with modules such as Leading Leaders and Shaping the Vision. Both programs are being built with input from industry and guidance from a full-time faculty expert in our business program. Workforce will also continue to inform other programs such as our new chemistry degree that targets key industries and graduate level proposals for a master's of science in nursing administration and education specialist degree in school psychology. Taken as a whole, we genuinely believe that the collective efforts described in this presentation will complement the great work of our fellow NSHE institutions, better prepare a broader population of students for lifelong success, and promote economic growth in Nevada. Thank you very much. And I'm not going to take questions for the university.
Thank you very much. Does anybody on the committee or any other of the regents have any questions for any one of the presenters? Those were all excellent presentations, and our mission is workforce. I mean, no matter what level in the institution, community college, or our universities, or our state college, we're all about workforce. Okay, seeing none, we're going to go on to the next item because We're going to have a hard time finishing on time, but we're only meeting for an hour, and it's only twice a year, so I think we can go over. We're going to go on to item number 6, the Workforce Incentive Grant, and with that, we'll give you Acting Vice Chancellor. Yeah, oh, it's you. I was thinking, who's this? Okay, it's Renee Davis here. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. I'm really delighted to be here today to talk about the WIG program. When we first started working on the program, folks were like, oh, that's a terrible acronym. But as Regent Del Carlo said, it's easy to remember, so we ended up sticking with it. So you've already heard a little bit during this meeting about the AB 450 committee, which finished their work earlier this week. As part of that committee's work, the discussions were centered around a program to respond to the comments made earlier this year by the governor in creating a program that would make community college free for more Nevadans. And that program will be piloted using ARP funds. So one thing I wanted to make clear from the outset is that as part of this process, we will be going to the Interim Finance Committee in August. Jose Quiroga, who will be presenting shortly on the proposal, and I have been working with the governor's finance office on the proposal and all of the items to make sure we're in a good position on that agenda. Should we be approved, then we can move forward with the program beginning in spring of 23. So I don't want to take away too much time from Jose because he's got a lot to share. But just want to say that the aim of this program really is to support the workforce demands of the state. And so it's a little different from other programs in that the academic programs we're targeting will be those that are in demand for the state. And Jose will give a little more detail on that. So without further ado, I'll hand it over to Jose Quiroga.
Thank you. Jose Quiroga, research analyst for the record. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about this exciting pilot program. As Acting Vice Chancellor Davis already stated, it does come from the opportunity of up to $5 million coming from the American Rescue Plan funds to fund and incentivize enrollment in certain workforce training programs. Not only will this program target workforce needs across the state, but it will also fill in some of the gaps of current state-funded financial aid programs, so that students who perhaps don't qualify for Governor Gwynne Millennium Scholarship funds due to not being recent high school graduates, as well as Nevada Promise, and who are perhaps part-time enrolled and therefore not eligible for Silver State Opportunity Grant, would be potentially eligible for the Workforce Incentive Program, also called WIG, as we've talked about. I will be going quickly through this in the interest of time, but something I did want to point out is that this draft was created May 2nd. Since then, with the feedback from presidents of institutions as well as from the AB 450 committee, there have been some changes that I will point out as we go through. Students will need to be enrolled in certain degree and certificate programs. And I'll speak a little later on how we developed that list. They must be enrolled in 6 credits or above. As I mentioned, this is an important part where part-time students, for the first time, are funded through state-funded financial aid programs in the state of Nevada. They must be residents for tuition purposes, meet certain GPA and PACE requirements, also called satisfactory academic progress requirements. They must not have previously earned a bachelor's degree, and this is key, they must fill out a FAFSA, Free Application for Student Aid, federal student aid, and they must qualify for the Pell Grant. So it will be targeted to those students with high financial need. That is also part of the American Rescue Plan, as students who are Pell Grant eligible are seen as disproportionately affected by the COVID-19 pandemic and therefore eligible for funding under this funding mechanism.
there are two populations of students that we wanted to make sure were also included, even though they would not usually meet the FAFSA and Pell Grant portion of eligibility. The first is those students who are eligible for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, or DACA. That student population can fill out the FAFSA, but is not eligible for the Pell Grant regardless of household income. For that student population, we'll be using a measure of federal poverty guidelines. Your materials do say 200%. That's been revised down to 185%. In order to match the same category of disproportionately affected by COVID-19 pandemic as Pell Grant. And then the second population is students who are prohibited by law from completing the FAFSA. We're already in the process of adopting an alternative needs analysis for those students for the Silver State Opportunity Grant, and we'll use the same application starting in fall 2023 for this population of students to be eligible for the WIG grant. And we will use the same 185% of federal poverty guidelines threshold to be eligible for the program. As we look at the targeted in-demand occupations, the way that, those lists were developed institution by institution was to match the in-demand occupations identified by the Governor's Office of Workforce Innovation by each region, served by each community college, and statewide, with the degrees and certificates offered by our community colleges. We also consulted the presidents of each college to make sure that those lists that we were seeing matched what the needs they were seeing at each institution. And we consulted the AB 450 committee and received their feedback on the high needs of the state. The list at each college, listed in Appendix A, will be reviewed annually if this funding continues to make sure that as the state needs change, so will WIG eligibility. If I can point your attention to page 4 of your reference material, that starts the list of each institution's degree and certificates. A few things I wanted to point out of those is that the number of stackable credentials you'll see under each occupation. In many of these, there are certificates that lead to associates and in some cases bachelor's degrees in all workforce needs. One part that has been revised since this draft material is the inclusion of education degrees in all institutions. So that's early childhood education all the way through K-12. We heard the importance of those degrees, even though at several institutions they don't directly lead to licensure. The importance of the pipeline of educators in Nevada is critical. So they are now included at every community college. You will notice there are many degrees that carry over institution to institution. Nursing, for example, is a high need across the state. But there are also unique programs at each institution, as well as unique occupational needs, as the regional needs of, let's say, Elko can definitely differ from those of Las Vegas. And I won't go through all of them now for the interest of time, but each institution has 10 occupations with many different degrees and certificates under it. To go back to page 2 of your materials, there you will see the award amounts. They go from $1,000 per semester for part-time students enrolled in 6 to 8.5 credits, all the way to $2,000 per semester for full-time students. These amounts are meant to pay and cover the full amount of registration fees, and for most programs, also mandatory fees. And because this program targets Pell Grant eligible students for the most part, it is part of a full financial aid package that is meant to cover registration fees, mandatory fees, and have leftover for other living and educational expenses. For students to continue to be eligible for these programs, they must continue to meet satisfactory academic progress. But it will be important to note to students that this is currently a pilot program. Though we hope for more, and we will work towards more permanent funding, the pilot program does mean that eligibility in one semester does not necessarily mean that they will be awarded the funds in a future award period. The program timeline will start spring 2023, as long as the program is funded, and go through fall 23, spring 2024, and fall 2024 if funds are available. That is to fulfill the requirements of the American Rescue Plan funding that does require all funds be allocated to be expended by the end of the calendar year 2024. The materials do say that the allocation is to be determined. However, that will be allocated by the Chancellor's Office to each institution based on enrollment. College of Southern Nevada having the highest enrollment would receive the most funding and so on down the line. Outreach, a very important area, will primarily be carried out by the institutions, as is the case for all other financial aid programs. The most appropriate people to talk to students about their financial aid are financial aid advisors, recruiters, and other institutional staff. However, as the Office or the Department of Academic and Student Affairs, we'll support that as we can with informational materials and websites. And the final portion that we added to this proposal is a reporting requirement or a reporting and accountability section where the Department of Academic and Student Affairs will continue to report students who received funding under this, student success metrics, along with requirements of the American Rescue Plan for reporting. With all that, I'll turn it back to the chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jose. Does anyone on the committee or any regents have any questions? Go ahead, Acting Vice Chair.
Thank you, Acting Vice Chancellor for Academic and Student Affairs and Community Colleges. I just wanted to not forget to mention that the AB 450 committee did write a letter of support, and as well as we attached to that the updated proposal for the program, and those have both been transmitted to staff for inclusion with the minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? I just want to be clear on the funding. I know this was a one-time grant, so it's going to be a pilot program, and I guess at the end of the pilot, it'll be assessed, because for this program to go forward, once this one-time grant money, whatever funds are called, let's see, rescue funds, then it would have to be funded by the legislature, right, as a...
That is correct, Madam Chair. It is a $5 million request through American Rescue Plan funds that would be expended through calendar year 2024. The hope there would be, as happened with Silver State Opportunity Grant, that a pilot program that showed success would then be funded more permanently by the legislature.
Okay, great, because it's a wonderful opportunity for students that are left from some of the other programs, so hopefully we'll keep some good numbers and have a really great success story to tell in a couple years. So thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll go on to item number 7, which is new business. Does anyone on the committee or any regents have any new business they'd like to add? Oh, here's some proposed new business items. Across the system, our community colleges are doing exciting work on various apprenticeship programs. We also have 3 grant-funded positions at the NC system level. And we're asking for a presentation on the workforce being done in this area. So we'll have that at a future meeting. And then as the system office considers bringing on a new leader over workforce, would it be possible to also work on a policy or procedure guiding the formulation of campus workforce development plans? That's a great idea. So we'll put that on a future agenda. Does anyone have anything else? Okay, hearing none, we'll go on to public comment. Is there public comment in ELCO?
There is not.
Thank you. Hearing none, we'll go on to Las Vegas. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
There is none.
Thank you. And we're back in Reno, and we do have public comment. You have the floor for 2 minutes, please, and state your name.
My name is Larry Daly. D-A-I-L-E-Y, and I'm emeritus professor of journalism here at the university. I appreciate the comments that one of the presidents made about the importance of the ADA. This semester, a student at UNR had an internship that student got on their own. The internship provider didn't realize that the student had a disability. The student put in for an accommodation. The student's instructor, and this was a required internship for a program, the graphic arts program at the university. On her first day on the job, her supervisor, noticing the symptoms of her disabilities, made statements to the effect, this isn't going to work out, maybe you should consider dropping. The instructor immediately and in writing made the suggestion that the student give up their chance for an internship and they'd substitute just some other elective. An associate dean, ironically for diversity, took active steps to withhold or slow down the provision of accommodations for that student. The student is stubborn. She went ahead and insisted that what was happening seemed illegal. By midterm, the internship didn't seem to have a lot to do. The student got the internship. I asked the student, what's going on? Why don't you have a lot to do? I've already completed all the work that they thought an intern could do all semester long. Workforce development and diversity require work, not just cheerleading, and they require getting our fingernails dirty. Now, I realize some of this goes to the next committee, and I will be happy to present there too. But I would offer that a person with disabilities who might otherwise end up on state support, who actively contributes to the Nevada community, there's an exponential return on investment there if you are willing to make sure that these universities walk the talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Public comment? Seeing none, meeting is adjourned. Thank you.